Indigenuity. Have you ever heard that word? Indigenuity. It's a brand new word. That's why you've not heard it before. Isn't that cool? You kind of just intuitively know what it means. It was coined by Daniel Wildcat. He's an author and a professor at Haskell Indian College in Lawrence, Kansas. And the idea of indigenuity is that we're in a time to adopt the practices of indigenous people and to apply them to modern problems such as climate issues. Good stuff, isn't it? The power that can be wrapped into one single word. I remember after a recent noon meditation, because I just learned this at the beginning of the year, which seems like a fresh time to hear a new word, and I shared it with the circle. We'd all just come out of a half hour of meditation together, so we were in that yummy space. And I said, I learned this new word, indigenuity. And we all just kind of marveled in our own little spaces, saying the word out loud again. Wow, indigenuity. That's, I like that. I really like that. I get that. So it is that kind of inspiration, right, that comes out of newness, out of new possibilities. Just when we think there's nothing new under the sun, you know, we like to say that. And then along comes something brand new. And it sparks something in us again, doesn't it? It sparks a passion in us again. It inspires us. Yes, we can indeed, right? Whatever it is, the problems we think we have in the world, or maybe that feel, you know, very much real, are also in motion. Everything is in motion. They are temporary waves that come through our lives, and we have the ability through saying yes, through stepping in, through opening ourselves, through allowing ourselves to be inspired to move the needle in the direction we want it to go. Such good stuff that we have available to us. I said this word to a poet friend of mine, Kit, the other day, indigenuity. She said, oh, I love that. And immediately she went to an example from the book Braiding Sweetgrass by Robin Wall Kimmerer. She said, it's like the three sisters, the story of the three sisters. You know the story of the three sisters? That's what I said. Do you want me to tell you? Yeah. Oh, okay, good. They are corn, beans, and squash. And the indigenuity of these three being planted together is that corn, when it's first planted, it needs to be planted first to make this whole thing work. So that's the firstborn sister. And we let the corn rise a little bit and that strong stem be developed, so then the beans are coming along and they can use that stem without interfering with the corn, but that allows them to grow up into their glory. So that's the second sister, beans. And then the third sister, the youngest sister, comes along. That would be me. I'm squash. I don't know about you guys. If you find yourself in the birth order, or pumpkin. You could be a pumpkin if you want. But the squash then has those broad leaves, and so the third sister comes along and she sort of shelters the soil area for the stems and the beans, and so they thrive because they've got a little shade there because of squash. And so that's why those three sisters, those three seeds are planted together. And it's a great gift to be given those three seeds together, because what you have just then been given is a gift of indigenuity. And we all have this, don't we? We all have an indigenous wisdom in us. We are all indigenous as human beings, as Homo sapiens, to this earthiness, this earthy experience that we have here. We all feel that pull to nature, to be close to nature, and to remember that our bodies and earth are one. What I loved about Kit's example, too, is that when we are in creative flow, there's all kinds of synchronicities that happen, serendipity and divine order. So when she immediately said, oh, braiding sweetgrass, I said, oh, that's being studied right now at Unity. There's a study group on that book. You know, of all the books in the world, you know, all of this comes together in that kind of flow. which just then it sparks another inspiration, doesn't it? To realize that everything is happening in this kind of flow. We just don't always see it. We don't always feel it. But when we pause and remember who we are and what we're about from a spiritual standpoint, suddenly we become much more aware of the beauty of creativity and the passions that we hold get rekindled once again. So this week is our second in our series, Jumpstart Your Heart for the New Year. And the message today, as you've heard in many ways, is creative passion. So if you consider that one single word could create all of that, right, all of that inspiration, and that was just in the couple places where I've shared the word. So when you go and share the word, who knows what will be seeded and planted and grow from that space, right, of wow, that's cool, I really like that, I can feel into that. And what is really happening is we're invoking the divine spirit from within us, right, so that more and more can be opened and unfold. Ephesians 3:20 says this: Now to the divine who by the power at work within us is able to accomplish abundantly far more than all we can imagine or ask. Far more. So sometimes our asks are pretty small. Sometimes our imaginations get pretty limited. And we get in that kind of ho-hum sort of space, right? Or even kind of, you know, heavy space. And yet there's so much more. There's so much divine potential. There's so much possibility. There's so much probability when we say yes to something that is bubbling up inside us, or we open ourselves to hear the newness or see the world with curiosity and notice something we never noticed before. Do you ever do that? You've walked by something 1,000 times before, and then one day, all of a sudden, you notice that bright red sign that you've walked, and it's like, wow, that is a really beautiful color. I have never noticed that before. And then suddenly, that might spark something more for you to recognize, to stay awake, to open in our daily lives to all that is here, the magic and the mystery and the miracles that are happening all the time. Like the Peter Meyer song, everything is holy now. We don't notice that until we just open and rest and see and look and connect then with this passion. So what are you passionate about? What's that? Unity. I love it. Me too, Irene. So what it is that we love, right, in life, what it is that we love to do, what do you love to, you know, I don't know about you, but I've, you know, been a generalist a lot of my life, and that really I had a lot of passion for a lot of things, which was way overwhelming. I'll never forget when my friend Mary Ellen and I walked into this agency when we were 22, and we basically told the person, it was a Jane Addams conference, it was a not-for-profit organization in Chicago, and we had a list, like a 2-page list of all the world's problems that we wanted to hope to address. And we had passion for it all, you know? We wanted to make a contribution to the world. And so, but then over time, right, you get to know yourself, and you get to know yourself a little better, and then you go, oh, wow, I really love to do this. This is something I really love to do. This really renews me. So whatever that is for you, whatever that spark is for you, and it changes over time sometimes, but what is it for you? What is that thing that you love? When you make a list of the priorities in your life and you make a list of the things that light you up, that bring you joy, that you love, do those match up? Because for a lot of us, it's like the thing that lights us up the most is sort of in the middle or the bottom of that list, right? Carl said this in the earlier service. And so we need to rejumble then those priorities. Why? You might think I'm talking about some kind of selfish thing about, oh, but it's just about me. But oh no, this is not about selfishness at all. Because when you're lit up, then whatever it is you bring to the world is going to be more effective and more igniting, right? When you're filled up, then you have so much to give and to share. It overflows. And so it's important that we recognize that truth. The mystic and theologian Howard Thurman said life is alive with creative intelligence. And he gave us this advice: don't ask what the world needs. Ask what makes you come alive and go and do that, because what the world needs is more people who have come alive. Amen? Yes. Including us, right? Starting right here. We want to feel engaged in life, intrigued by life, you know, hooked in. It's not just something we're just going through the motions, but it's something that has us. Spirit has us and is showing us every day the possibilities of transforming ourselves, and which is really about not so much changing ourselves, but just taking off everything that blocks the truth, right? So that the truth of who we are, the authentic truth of who we are, can be revealed as divine spirits, as unique soul expressions. So as we begin to ask the question, what am I passionate about? What do I love? What brings me joy? It begins to then help us determine what it is that lights us up, what brings us passion, and then to name it, which is very powerful, to begin to name it, to begin to see it and say it and put it out there in the world, and then claim it as ours, to own it as ours. So this process is very simple and yet very very powerful, because then we suddenly, we want to be doing that. We want to be interacting in that way. Sometimes we don't even know, why do we love to do what it is that we love to do? You don't necessarily need to know. If you love digging in the dirt or finger painting or whatever it is that you love to do, just do it without needing to have to understand it or what it does for you or what it, I mean, you can do that if you want. It's an intellectual exercise. But the Spirit says, just experience it. Just put it out there. Just dance in that. Just be that. Just let yourself fall into the music. Let yourself be revealed and create just like Spirit does. I mean, that's why we're here, right? So Spirit could see itself and know itself and evolve. We're all about evolution. That's why I love that affirmation at the beginning of the year, I resolve to evolve. It just reminds us that it's what we're doing anyway, but it's like putting a commitment behind it. Yeah, this is what I'm about. This is what's exciting. This is what gets me out of bed and says, you know, what's going on today? Put me in. Where do I need to be? How do I need to show up? What can I be a part of? How can I contribute? That's passion in action. Sometimes our passions come from a spiritual calling. We really feel a calling, right? Sometimes throughout our lives, we have those very clear kinds of calling. Sometimes they're little intuitive nudges, little pushes, recognitions. It comes in all these different packages and ways. But we in this room, I know every single one of you and every person behind the camera and whoever's sitting outside, hello, that all of us have been on the journey for a while. Even if you're brand new to Unity, you've been in this life journey for a while, right? And you've probably been playing in spirituality one direction or another for a while. And so it is when we are on the journey, we've had enough experience to know that when the nudge comes, when the calling comes, knocking at the door, open it. Say yes. Walk through. See what's there. Because that curiosity will lead to inspiration, will lead to creativity, will lead to a stirring up of your passions, so many things, a revelation of your true self, and a true contribution to the world. In No Guardrails, it's an excerpt from The Callings by Greg Lavoie. Okay, I'm pausing once again because it looks a little bit like kind of sleepy and warm. Are we warm? We're warm. Yeah, let's open the door. Thank you. It's kind of humid outside today, so it'll be some nice air coming in. Thank you, Mike. So in No Guardrails, it's an excerpt from Callings by Greg Lavoie. He shares this story. He just moved from big city life in San Francisco to a wide desert and mountainscape of New Mexico. He said not only was the landscape so different and the rhythm of daily life so completely different, but even the culture was so foreign to him. And so he's in this space of a sense of everything is uncertain and uncomfortable and unknown, and maybe even a little background subtext that says, what have I done, right? Anybody ever do that? You say yes to the call, you go in that direction, and then you go, uh-oh, what have I done? Did I make a mistake? And so he's kind of in that frame of mind when something really stunning happens. This bird smacks into the glass of his office where he's seated. And some of its feathers are still stuck to the window when it falls to the ground. Yeah. And then something even more shocking and a bit gruesome happens. A magpie flies in and pecks the little meadowlark to death that just hit the window. Then something else happens. The magpie picks up the meadowlark, brings her over to an apricot tree, and flies away. And Greg is sitting there going, what just happened? I mean, was the magpie putting away a snack for later? Or was the magpie doing a mercy killing? And so he's just sitting in this space of just, and he thinks, you know, I could call the ornithology department, I think that's the right term, at the local University of New Mexico and get an answer. Or I could not call, which he didn't, and just wonder. And he wondered for a month. And he was in that space of creative wondering, of opening up to all that could possibly be happening there. He said that the magpie incident pushed me deeper into a sense of loss and fragility of life, of not knowing, which I did not like one bit. But then he makes this observation that I think we could maybe all relate to. He says, and there's a slide for this, perhaps it was growing up in a culture that doesn't know the difference between uncertainty and anxiety, and to which mystery is something to be solved, not serenaded. Now that quote is worth a pause, is it not? Because what if we realize that the widespread anxiety in our society is just an aversion to uncertainty? I mean, that's a spiritual lens on a psychological problem that is truly a big issue in our society. But what if it's just because we haven't let go and danced in the mystery of the divine, and that's all that we're being urged to do? And then what if instead of pretending or putting our minds to solving that amazing mystery, we just serenaded it instead? Allowing us to truly dance in that creative space of spirit by being just there. Greg's story continues. A month later, he makes the call. And the academic, the scientific expert who answers, says, magpies are opportunists and will take advantage of an injured bird at any time for an easy meal. End of story, right? Done, all wrapped up. He says, I hung up feeling disappointed. Not in the cruelty of nature, but in the cruelty of certitude. It's that cruelty that puts a cap on our creativity, that puts a cap on our dance in the unknown, that puts a cap on the possibilities that we cannot know. That's the whole jam of spirituality, right? The surrendering into the unknown is how we move and allow spirit to move and have its being in us. It takes us to the next level, the next possibility, the next open door, the next thing that we can walk into and say, wow, I've never been here before. I've never experienced this before, and that we can be a part of the co-creation of that unfolding. The Thursday night, we had Unity Basics here. Traditionally, that's been a class where people who want to become members or who are new to Unity come. And it's kind of a process. It's pretty clear. You know, we learn about the history. We go through the five principles. I kind of know where I'm going on each of these. But this time, years past, which I love about this community, folks who have been here for decades come. And they bring their experiences into the mix, too. And boy, we were going all over the place when we were talking about some of these principles. And I had to pause at one point and say, okay, new folks, is this confusing? But, you know, it's at the same time, I felt stirred about it and excited about it because it showed me how we can have basic guiding principles, right? Which something to hang on to, which we like, right? A little something to hang on to, a little shape to say a little bit about who we are and what we believe. And yet they open worlds when we approach them as a divine mystery. When we approach them with a sense of co-creativity, the third principle, things start to open up in us and in the room and in our conversations and in our connections. Ahas, insights, new ideas, curiosities. That's creative passion and action. That's a jump start to the heart, isn't it? To go, wow, okay, I thought I kind of had this down. And now something else has opened up. That's, I think, what keeps us feeling like Howard Thurman was talking about, alive, right? Engaged, excited. So far, we've looked at passions today as things that are exciting to us, that are inspirational, that pull us, the visions, the spiritual callings, the things that pull forward, that are the call to become, to be and to become more, right? But also, we end up into our passions and our inspirations and our co-creations sometimes because life circumstances push us with the pain that we feel. Anybody ever experienced that? Yeah. Reverend Michael Beckwith, a lot of people know in the room know him. He's the founder of Agape, which is a cousin of Unity, part of the New Thought family. And he says that we are pushed sometimes by pain until we are pulled by a vision. Did you know the whole Unity movement was started because Mother Myrtle Fillmore was pushed by pain? She was given a prognosis of 6 months to live. She grew up in a culture and a family who told her that disease is inherited, that if a doctor tells you you have a prognosis, you accept it as on face value, and that's just simply the way it is. And then she received a new thought, literally, at a new thought lecture that she and her husband Charles went to, where Eugene B. Weeks said, I am a child of God, and therefore I do not inherit illness. And everything shifted for her. Inside of her. She got excited about this idea, inspired by this truth. Could it be that all this pain that had been pushing her forward had brought her somewhere that was now pulling her with a vision? And then Myrtle didn't just leave it at that, because we can just leave it at that and go, wow, that was a really cool experience that I had back a few years ago. Instead, she went, all right, let's open this up. Let's put the inner spiritual work and practice to this and see what really happens here. And so she began to use our teaching. She meditated. She did affirmative prayer. She affirmed and blessed all the organs of her body, all the parts of her body. She went into sometimes long, you know, periods of meditation. She worked at it over and over again, affirming the truth, beginning to feel it, beginning to restore herself, starting to feel more energy and vitality and possibility. And that pulled vision just gave her more and more possibility and potential. And she could see, wow, and she could feel it, and she could experience it. And then in 2 years, she was completely healed. And then she was on fire to share it with other people, because she wanted other people to know that through this method that they too could heal themselves. So she was very clear. Myrtle did not heal anyone. But people would come into her office hobbling on crutches, and they'd walk out on their own 2 feet. Because she knew she had made a way through that passage. She had been the leader to break through that consciousness based on what she received and then gave it, co-created something, shared something with others. And some people grabbed onto it, and they too were healed. And imagine that they too then were a spark of possibility of health and wholeness and healing for someone else. And so it goes, right? That is co-creativity in action. That is us receiving and giving and receiving and giving, like we talked about last week in the law of circulation. So here we are today, you know, because then she joined, of course, with Charles, her husband, and they created Unity and everything that is a part of Unity. And here we stand today, and it's not the end of the story. We're still evolving and creating and asking and wondering who we are and what we have come here to be. We're still reaching and being pushed and being pulled and being called and being asked and being uplifted and having that inspiration arise up within us and then being slammed by things in our lives. And then we say, okay, I'm getting back up because this is going to push me until the vision pulls me, until the calling comes again, until the spiritual nudge or the intuition says, go there, say that, do this. And guess what? We know, because this has come knocking before. Yes, 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 Spirit. Use me, oh God, so that I can be an instrument of peace and love and joy and possibility for others, so others too can be healed and whole and vital and alive and excited about life, that others can also wake up and not feel slammed by the life circumstances that they're in, but they can say, you know what, this is just a little push, and this little push is going to bring me to the vision, going to bring me to the goodness, going to bring me to the abundance that is mine to claim and to name and to be and to give and to co-create and to breathe out into the world and to let every heartbeat that rises up within me have meaning, to let every breath that I take have meaning. And that doesn't mean you have to go into some deep, you know, what is my divine purpose? I've got to figure it out, you know. No, just live it. Just live it. If you love to swim, go swimming. If you love to run, go running. If you love to teach, get out there and teach. If you like to write, get yourself a notebook or a computer and get at it. Because by doing that, because by doing that, we give to the world. You know, it's not even about the book that you didn't finish, or the song you never did the last verse for, or the poem, or whatever it is, because you have contributed. It's not about the end game. The contribution is the engagement and the energy. When you engage in creativity, whatever form that might take for you, when you engage it, it doesn't have to be classic art kind of creativity, any kind of creativity, science, anything that you do that lights you up. When you engage in it, you give a gift to the world. I always think about Eckhart Tolle, who I just adore, who, when he wrote The Power of Now, it became this like almost instant bestseller, and it was translated into all these languages all around the world. And he says, but that wasn't the joy. The joy was when I was sitting at my kitchen table scribbling the notes that became The Power of Now. The joy was in the creative process that puts us in the divine flow that allows us to know our potential to be dancing in the mystery of what might I become and what I might give to the world by doing what I love. So let's toss out all the to-dos that are like big, heavy, burdensome things. I'm not saying we don't have responsibilities, but even the responsibilities can be infused with joy, because if we're prioritizing that which lights us up, the rest of what we do will just flow. And that's what jumpstarting our heart in this creative way is all about. Are you in? Yeah, me too. So let's give ourselves to this. Let's really give ourselves over to this, whatever it is that is bubbling up in you, that is that creative spark that wants to be known and experienced through you. Let's say our affirmation together. This year, I'm jump-starting my heart. I follow my passions and spread joy through creation. And so it is.